At this time, we want to thank the Pep Milk Company for standing by while we bring you the latest news from Europe. The Mary Lee Taylor program will be heard over most of these stations immediately following the news.
Good morning, everyone. This is Bob Trout bringing you the news of Europe's war, which today is the news of Washington, D.C., where the United States Congress meets to consider the ways and means of keeping it Europe's war. In 2 hours, at the historic moment of noon, Washington time, the gavels fall in the chambers of Senate and House, and the 76th Congress will be in special session assembled, come at the call of the President to take up the matter of how to be neutral with the old world in flames. When the Senate has walked through the marble corridors of the Capitol to the hall of the House of Representatives and the President enters to deliver in person his message, CBS will open its microphones in the Capitol to bring you the event and to let you hear the President's words this at 2:45 this afternoon, Eastern Daylight Saving Time. If the President's address is finished by 3:30 Eastern Daylight Saving Time, we shall bring you an address by the French Premier, Edouard Daladier. As the national legislators in Washington occupy themselves with the arms embargo growing out of this nation's first attempt at a neutrality act back in 1935, as the lawmakers consider the positions of those who want to go back to international law, where we were before Japan marched into Manchuria, and consider also the positions of the isolationists who believe that Europe is none of our business, Fortune magazine announces the results of its survey on the war and our relation to it. The result? More than 83% of Americans want the Allies to win the war. More than two-thirds of the United States is opposed to strict isolation. In Europe, where the eyes of nearly every government are turned toward Washington today, Germany rushes troops and equipment to the Western Front. Russia straightens out its line of occupation in Poland, announces the capture of 60,000 Polish troops, while the Russian newspapers declare the Red Army showed unheard-of and previously unwitnessed mass heroism. The German shortwave radio station announces the assassination of the Premier of Romania, Armand Călinescu. The French announce the completion of general mobilization with 6 million under arms. Paris says Captain Baron von Richthofen, son of the famous German World War ace, has been shot down and killed. Meantime, the capital city of what was Poland, Warsaw, modern metropolis of some 1 million inhabitants, still holds out on the 13th day of the siege, battered by bomb and shell, starved, its great buildings destroyed, one of the heroic last stands of all time. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WJSV, Washington. Good morning. Once again, John Grohl has the pleasure of announcing that another Mary Lee Taylor radio demonstration is underway in the Pep Milk Experimental Kitchen. You know, for nearly 6 years now, Miss Taylor has broadcast two recipes a week, one on Tuesday, another on Thursday, which make appetizing, delicious food that's more wholesome and at the same time costs less. The stuffed vanilla wafers, which are the feature this morning, are a perfect example of the creative genius that reigns over this kitchen. Now, of course, you may be saying that these coconut-filled vanilla wafer sandwiches aren't news to you at all, because you were tempted by a color photograph of them in your grocery store to take the recipe that was offered and buy the needed groceries, and you've already made stuffed vanilla wafers. Or you may be saying to yourself that you found the same recipe in the latest Pep Milk cookbook called Delicious Wholesome Meals for 2 or 4 or 6, and have discovered the charms of a wonderful filling. Well, if you have, you're one up on me. I haven't.
Oh, yes, but you're about to, John Cole, and you know it, so you needn't pretend to be so abused.
All right, Mary Lee Taylor.
And now, good morning to everyone in my nice audience. If you could look into this Pep Milk kitchen through your loudspeaker, I know you'd think that the stuffed vanilla wafers I've been putting together look mighty festive. The creamy yellow filling, bristling with coconut, certainly has a come-hither look. And Mr. Cole has fallen for it in a big way. He's reaching for a second one now with a look on his face that makes me think the first one just hit the right spot.
It did, and the second and third will, too.
Well, now let me give you the tested recipe. So easily make stuffed vanilla wafers out of 4 grocery staples. Vanilla wafers, marshmallows, coconut, and Pep Milk. Like all Pep Milk recipes, this one will have both the directions and the amounts of the ingredients listed in the order in which you use them. Ready? Then write down first, melt over boiling water. Melt over boiling water 2 tablespoons butter. 2 tablespoons butter. Blend in 2 tablespoons flour. 2 tablespoons flour. 1/8 teaspoon salt. 1/8 teaspoon salt. Stir in slowly. 1/2 cup pet milk. 1/2 cup pet milk. Cook until thick and smooth, stirring constantly. Cook until thick and smooth, stirring constantly. Then add 16 marshmallows. 16 marshmallows. Continue cooking while stirring until marshmallows are melted. Continue cooking while stirring until marshmallows are melted. Remove from heat and fold in. Remove from heat and fold in 1 1/2 cups shredded coconut. 1 1/2 cups shredded coconut. Cool thoroughly. Spread on flat sides of. Spread on flat sides of 18 vanilla wafers. 18 vanilla wafers. Cover with 18 vanilla wafers. Putting flat sides of wafers next to filling. Cover with 18 vanilla wafers, putting flat sides of wafers next to filling. Makes ample for 6. Now, when you use that recipe for stuffed vanilla wafers I've just given, don't think that mixture of melted marshmallows and pet milk is too thin. It will be quite thin when you first take it off the heat, which should be just as soon as the marshmallows have melted. When the coconut is stirred in and the filling cooled, as it should be, it will be just right to spread on the vanilla wafers or on graham crackers or some favorite plain cookie you've made yourself. By the way, if graham crackers are your preference, you need to know that you have filling enough for only 24. Yes, 24 graham crackers, rather than the 36 vanilla wafers mentioned in the recipe. That number of vanilla wafers is based on the size in which most of them come, 2 inches in diameter. Because there are smaller ones, I suggest that you buy your vanilla wafers by weight. And 6 ounces, yes, 6 ounces, will give you just enough vanilla wafers to come out even with the filling. For the shredded coconut in the stuffed vanilla wafers, you need 4 ounces. That's 4 ounces, which is the exact amount that a can of coconut holds. Of course, you can use bulk coconut if you prefer. To get just the 16 marshmallows required to make the filling for stuffed vanilla wafers, you need to buy only 1/4 pound. Yes, 1/4 pound. And there's another tip about this very useful recipe. If you have young daughters who have reached the stage when they want to cook, let them try their wings with stuffed vanilla wafers. Besides being a perfectly fail-proof recipe, the cookies, it turns out, are most wholesome food for them to eat. Not too rich nor too sweet. Made with whole milk and containing a surprising amount of that. What could be more perfect for youngsters? The whole milk in these stuffed vanilla wafers is, of course, pure, safe pet milk, used in its double-rich, undiluted form, just as it comes from the can. If you're thinking that a cup of cream would have just about the consistency of undiluted pet milk, and you could use that in its place without making the spread too thin, don't forget that cream is far from being whole milk. And that's what pet milk is when it comes to supplying the food values which have earned for whole milk the reputation of being nature's most nearly perfect food. That half a cup of undiluted pet milk in the stuffed vanilla wafers supplies the food value of a cup of extra rich whole milk. But obviously you couldn't put a cup of ordinary milk into this filling. That would make it too thin. And if you used a half a cup of ordinary milk in place of the half a cup of undiluted double rich pet milk called for in the recipe, you would be making the filling far less wholesome. Not only because it would contain less than half the important whole milk substances, but because it would have practically none of the sunshine vitamin D which pet milk puts into it, because all pet milk is irradiated. Which means that it is enriched with this priceless vitamin that growing children must have to help make their teeth and bones grow properly. Just think of being able to give your family some of the vitamin D they so much need in delicious food. Well, with my very best wishes for your great success with my stuffed vanilla wafers, I must leave you until next Tuesday when I'll be found on the station to which you're listening now, ready to demonstrate a brand new dish that's especially nice for party. Daylight saving time will be over on next Sunday night, and the return to standard time may make a difference in the hour when you'll be hearing me next Tuesday. So check your newspaper, please, for the exact time of my next Tuesday demonstration. Until Tuesday, then, goodbye.
I herewith and before witnesses pin the blue ribbon on Mary Lee Taylor's stuffed vanilla wafers. Just bring that dish on the next guest you have, and your reputation as the best cook in your town will be undisputed from then on. And be sure to send for the latest pet milk cookbook, Delicious Wholesome Meals for 2, 4, or 6, which contains this useful recipe and 70 others for equally good food. To get a copy of this collection of balanced menus and tested recipes, just write your name and address and the word cookbook on the back of a pet milk label. Mail the label to Mary Lee Taylor in care of the station to which you are now listening, or to her in care of Pet Milk Company, St. Louis, Missouri. If you have a baby or a small child and don't have a copy of Better Babies, just add the words baby book to the back of the pet milk label you're sending for a copy of the latest pet milk cookbook, and you'll receive a book about babies that will satisfy your desire to know why babies thrive so remarkably well on irradiated pet milk. Doctors all over this country have put their baby patients who need milk from a bottle on irradiated pet milk, and the results they've obtained have made a sensation in the medical world. If you have a baby, ask your doctor about feeding him irradiated pet milk. Without any hesitation, he'll say that irradiated pet milk is perfectly pure and absolutely safe as if there were no disease germs in the world. He'll tell you, too, that pet milk is more easily digested than ordinary milk, and that the extra sunshine vitamin D it contains is most valuable for your baby. And now a final reminder that on next Saturday night, your pet milk program, the Saturday Night Serenade, will again bring you Mary Eastman, Bill Perry, the Serenaders, and Gus Henschen and his orchestra. And on next Tuesday, you can be hearing another of Mary Lee Taylor's radio demonstrations of better food made at lower cost. Now, since we'll be through with daylight saving time when Mary Lee Taylor broadcasts next Tuesday over the station to which you are now listening, do look at your newspaper for the exact time of her interesting and helpful radio demonstrations that morning. John Cole wishes you good luck and good health. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
10:15 sanitary food store time. Make sure you always get fresh bread. Julia Lee Wright is dated with today's date. You know it's first day fresh. Your neighborhood sanitary food store has fresh, dated Julia Lee Wright bread right now. WJSV, Washington. Campbell's Chicken Noodle Soup, the soup that's growing faster in popularity than any other soup in America, brings you another chapter in the thrilling life story of Brenda Curtis.
Goodbye, Sue. Goodbye, Tom. Don't be late and be sure to hurry home to lunch as soon as school's out.
There they go, back to school. Comes now the problem, what to give these husky two-legged appetites when they come marching home for lunch. It must be nourishing, yet it mustn't be heavy, because young heads mustn't nod over lessons. So I'd like you to hear what one wise mother I know quite often gives her youngsters for lunch on school days. She says,
I give them bread and butter and milk, perhaps a gelatin dessert, and for the main dish, a bowl of good soup. Lately, they've been calling for Campbell's chicken noodle soup pretty often. You know how children like the flavor of chicken, and they get plenty of chicken flavor in this soup. The good noodles make it nourishing, too.
Why don't you take the hint and serve a wholesome, easily prepared lunch like this to your children? See if they, too, don't delight in this tempting Campbell's chicken noodle soup, with its chicken-rich broth, its egg noodles, and its morsels of tender chicken meat. And, sure thing, enjoy a bowlful yourself along with them. And now, once again, Brenda Curtis. Hearing that Jim is fearful of losing his biggest case, which might close his law office, Brenda's old manager arranged an offer for her to return to the stage. Jim refused to let her consider it. Then Stacy Gordon, a friend of Jim's who once loved Brenda, returned from South America, and Gloria Bennett, who wants Jim, decided to use this fact for her own purposes. Now as our scene opens, it's evening, and we find Brenda putting Patsy to bed as Cleo looks on. Listen.
Well, Miss Patsy, if you ain't the cutest little thing I ever laid my two eyes on.
You see, Cleo, I knew she could say it.
Did I say it right, Mommy?
Why, of course you did, precious. Every last line of it.
And pretty soon she's going to be able to say them all by herself, ain't she, Miss Brenda?
Yes, indeed.
When I get big, Cleo?
Well, you won't have to wait that long, Sugar Plum.
And then by the time you're ready to go to kindergarten...
Yes, ma'am, she's going to be smarter than any of them other kids.
Now, hold still while I get your nightie on here, darling.
Want me to say the other one for you, Cleo?
Sure I do, Lemon.
There we are, all ready for bed. Now, which one do you want to say next? Humpty Dumpty?
No, the one about the piggies, Mommy.
Oh, that's a nice one. Now,
this little piggy
went
to... to market.
Right. And this?
And this little piggy stayed.
That's it. Now, where did the piggy stay?
This little piggy stayed home.
Yeah. Now, what did the other little piggy do, darling?
He forgot, Mommy.
Well, I bet you ain't forgot. You just playing possum, that's all.
No, I'm not, Cleo.
Come on, honey. And this little...
and this... little piggy
went
all the way home.
There you are.
You see, you didn't forget it after all.
Another one, Mommy.
Oh, not tonight, precious. It's way past your bedtime, and I must go down and phone Daddy Jim and see what's keeping him.
Mr. Jim sure is late this evening.
Yes, he is, Cleo, but he's probably been working so hard on that big Hargreaves patent case.
Yes, I suspect he's been talking himself hoarse down in that courtroom.
I'm to wait up for Daddy Jim, Mommy.
I don't think you'd better, Patsy.
No, old man Sandman, he's waiting for you, honey.
Come along now. Big hug.
Oh,
now we'll tuck you in.
Night, Mommy. night, Cleo.
Good night. God bless you and pleasant dreams.
Good night, precious. There we are. I'll turn off the the light, Cleo.
Yes.
She'll be asleep in no time.
It's a shame Mr. Jim didn't call earlier, ain't it, ma'am?
What makes you say that?
Well, maybe you could have invited that nice Mr. Gordon who called this afternoon to have dinner with you.
Well, we weren't prepared for guests anyway.
And maybe it's better you wasn't, anyhow.
Yes, perhaps it was. Well, Cleo, I guess you can just about make that movie you wanted to see.
But is you going to be all right here alone, Miss Brenda?
Yes, of course. Mr. Curtis will be here soon.
Yes.
Oh, there he is now, Cleo.
Then I'll get going, Miss Brenda.
Jim, darling, I'm so glad you're here at last.
Sorry I'm late. I was held up at the office. Passing on the building?
Mm-hmm, just a little while ago. She wanted to wait up for you, of course.
I couldn't make it earlier. Miss Winters bungled some work on this Hargraves case. I had to wait when she did it over.
That's too bad, Jim. How does the Hargraves case look?
Oh, just ducky.
I'm sorry, darling. Will it wind up tomorrow, as you expect?
Tomorrow, Monday.
Jim, haven't things been going well in court?
No, not at all.
Oh, Jim, don't say you're going to lose that case.
I may. I don't know.
Please. What is it, darling? You seem so upset. And you know how vitally this case may affect our whole future.
Only too well. Probably closing the office, kissing goodbye to this lovely new house, and the end of what should have been a brilliant legal career.
Jim, what's going to happen if you do lose? We simply can't wait until it's too late to make plans. We've Patsy to think of.
I'm thinking of Patsy.
Of course you are, dear.
And I suppose you're thinking of that offer Ziggy cooked up for you to do that play.
Darling, you do put things so oddly at times.
Would it make you happy, Brenda, if I did lose this Hargraves case?
Oh, Jim, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard you say.
Well, wouldn't it furnish you with just the excuse you need to go back to the theater?
How much longer must I try to convince you, darling, that I have no desire to go back to the theater?
I'll believe that when Myra and Ziggy let you alone.
Jim, Ziggy hasn't been here in a year. When Myra was out the other day, it was the first time in months.
But, Brenda, how do you expect a man to have peace of mind with that crew after you?
They haven't been after me. And you have peace of mind, Jim, if you could only stop to see it.
You really think so?
I do, Jim. You have me, you've Patsy, you've this new home. So much to be happy for.
Oh, it would be heaven, Brenda, if you'd keep out all those worries, all those people. Let me take care of it all.
I want you to, Jim. Mr. Myra and Ziggy in the theater.
Oh, as usual, I guess I'm the one to blame. Always worrying needlessly. Always getting upset.
You do work yourself up, darling.
Uh-huh, so much so that my business drops off and now I may lose the Hargraves case.
But worrying about those things, letting every little occurrence upset you, plunge you into a mood.
It affects my work, doesn't it, Brenda?
Can't you see that it does?
Of course. Makes me responsible for whatever may happen.
Jim, good heavens, you can be trying. You're not responsible for anything. We're responsible. Can't you discuss things reasonably, sensibly?
Oh, reasonably, sensibly. Honestly, sometimes I wonder if my mother wasn't right for not approving of our marriage.
That's mean, Jim. But hadn't we agreed not to stir up dead embers?
Possibly. I'm not the one who's stirring them up.
What is wrong with you tonight? What happened?
Oh,
darling?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Jim, you're being awfully unreasonable.
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. I am. I don't know what the dickens makes me this way. Come here.
There. Oh, that's so much better, dear.
Oh, your face is so soft. Oh, you precious darling. Oh,
Jim, you squeezed me to death.
Oh, my dearest, I love you so. I do.
I know. And I love you, Jim. That's why I hate to see these things undermining you, upsetting you.
Well, isn't worrying about this case enough to upset anyone?
I suppose it is, if you haven't thought of what you'll do if you lose.
I haven't.
Then, Jim, listen. Something happened today.
Something happened?
Yes. Those horrible people you think have been trying to lure me away from you have been worried for us, Jim.
Oh. Now they've been worried for us. I can imagine.
Jim, they have. Myra and Ziggy have been two of the sincerest friends a person could ever have.
And what have they been up to now?
Frankly, after I turned down that offer for the new Edwards play, they had a talk with Stacy Gordon.
Stacy Gordon?
Now, please don't leave, will you?
What prompted them to take it upon themselves to discuss our affairs with Stacy Gordon, of all people?
They've been worried for us.
Well, go on. How did they map out our destiny?
Jim, Stacy was just made executive vice president of his engineering firm.
so that he can take charge of this patent suit they'll be defending soon. You know about that?
Yes, another engineering firm, Lang & Stone, is suing them for a couple of millions for infringement.
So Stacy explained.
So Stacy explained. Brenda, was Stacy here to see you?
Yes, this afternoon to tell me about this thing.
What thing? For Pete's sake, what could he be out here to tell you?
Now, calm down, or I'll stop right here and now.
All right. Well, go on. What was Stacy doing here?
He'd like very much to be a good friend to you, Jim.
Only to me?
No, naturally to both of us. That's why he came out. And if what he had to say doesn't convince you of that fact...
What did my old friend Mr. Gordon have to say?
That he'd be more than glad to have you come with Carson Moore's legal staff to take over that case.
Why, how perfectly delightful of Mr. Gordon.
No need for sarcasm, Jim. I think he was being extremely friendly, considering how cool you were to him.
Yes? Well, I'm sorry, but I don't.
How can you say that, Jim?
Oh, come, Brenda, you must be getting blind.
Blind? Jim, what are you talking about?
Darling, what is Stacy Gordon to you?
A very intelligent, capable man, and a very good friend.
Nothing more?
I told you the day Stacy phoned Jim, the day after he arrived back in South America, that he was nothing more than a good friend.
Brenda, can't you see, or is it because you don't think I'll see, that Stacy would no more make a grandstand offer like that for me?
Are you implying that he didn't mean it?
He not only didn't mean it, he had a very definite reason behind it.
And that reason, in your opinion?
To show himself off as the big, successful engineer who condescends to help the poor, struggling attorney.
Oh, I think that's fantastic.
Is it? Well, then perhaps it's just a clever move to smash my pride, to make me look small and helpless in your eyes.
In my eyes?
Yes, Brenda. Or don't you see what I mean?
No, Jim, I don't. Why, he should want to do such a thing.
Because, my dear, Mr. Stacy Gordon was and still is quite in love with you.
Jim, you're an utter fool at times. Stacy may have been in love with me once, years ago, before I ever met
you.
He
is now, Brenda.
Whether that's true or not, how you could ever think that Stacy would be so dishonorable as to offer you a job for the purpose of...
That's just more than you can figure out, isn't it?
Much more.
Well, I can only say, Brenda, that with things like this going on, if I lose that Hargraves case, it won't be my fault. Not my fault at all.
Apparently, Gloria's clever move to let Jim know of Stacy Gordon's love for Brenda has produced the desired results. But before I tell you more about this, just give me a moment. A while ago, I suggested bowls of Campbell's chicken noodle soup as the main dish for the children's lunch. Now, when it comes to the food she serves her family, every mother wants to know two things particularly. First, how it's been prepared, and second, just how wholesome it is. If you could take a trip through Campbell's kitchens, I know they'd remind you of your own at home, just after you'd given it an extra scrubbing and polishing. And you'd see there the careful, painstaking way Campbell's go about making soup for you. Take Campbell's chicken noodle soup. You'd see how slowly the broth simmers as it gathers that deep, golden gleam that means chicken richness. You'd see the quantities of good egg noodles being ladled in and the added morsels of tender chicken meat for the final old-time touch. So remember, won't you, when you serve Campbell's chicken noodle soup to your family, you can be sure it's made the good old-time way. And that it's good and wholesome, too. Get Campbell's chicken noodle soup today from your grocer. Treat the whole family at supper time. If Jim does lose the Hargraves case, what will Brenda do? Face Jim's wrath by accepting Ziggy's offer? If not, how can Brenda extricate herself from this dangerous situation? Is it going to mean the end of everything for Brenda? Tomorrow, Gloria Bennett brings Jim into a situation which spells real trouble. Campbell's chicken noodle soup, the soup that's growing faster in popularity than any other soup in America, invite you to share again tomorrow and every day, Monday through Friday, same time, same station, in the true-to-life story of Brenda Curtis. Plan to be with us, won't you? Till then, this is Kenneth Roberts saying goodbye and good eating. Tomorrow at breakfast, start the day bright. Tomorrow at dinner, end the day right. Serve Campbell's tomato juice. Fresh, cool, inviting. But do as millions do. Make sure it's Campbell's. Because Campbell's canning process retains the fresh tomato flavor, safeguards the fresh tomato vitamins. No wonder Campbell's is the largest selling tomato juice in America. Your family deserves the best. Turn to Campbell's. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
10:30 Eastern Standard Time. Will the operation save Woody Marshall's sight? And will Judy Wilbur cling to him through this crisis? Listen to Your Family and Mine over this station at 1:30 o'clock. WJSV, Washington.
Rinsall's Big Sister. Rinsall presents the heart-stirring romance of a loyal woman, Big Sister, starring Alice Frost and Martin Gable, and brought to you by the new Richard Rinsall. Well, good morning, friends. Now, I just...
Say, Mr. Utell.
Oh, hello, Miss Pike. I didn't know you were standing there. Now, how's the dressmaking business, and what can I do for you?
I just happened to remember another customer story. You remember you asked me for some yesterday?
Oh, sure, swell. I was afraid I was announcing all wrong again. Are you going to tell me another customer you talked into trying Rinsall?
Well, not exactly.
Well, then...
Never mind. I think you'll like this one just as well. You see, this customer was a bug for being punctual. If she said a 10 o'clock fit-in, 10 o'clock it was, right on the dot.
I see. The
trouble was, I was the one who was always late.
My.
And when I made her wait, did she get mad?
Well, why did you?
Well, I have my own house to clean and my own dishes to wash and clothes and goodness knows what all.
I know, but...
Now, wait a minute. Don't get ahead of me. One day, this customer come in and had to wait, and she was mad fit to bust. She come running into my kitchen just as I was putting a bunch of clothes in to soak, and she said, "Pikey, once and for all, when I make an appointment for a certain time, I mean it. Land sakes, what's that you're doing?" So I told her I was just putting my clothes in to soak, and she said, "Well, where's the Rinsall?"
But I thought...
Young man, this was more years ago than I'm going to tell you.
I apologize.
Anyway, this lady sat down and told me the facts about Rinsall.
How
it saves time washing clothes because it does away with scrubbing on a washboard, and how easy it is to soak clothes clean, and then give a little special attention to those extra dirty spots, of course, and that's why women who use Rinsall weren't all done in on wash day. So you see, Mr. Utell, that was the customer who talked me into trying it, and I've been doing the same thing to my other customers ever since.
Oh, fine. A turnabout story, huh? And there's the signal for Big Sister. As Ruth Brewster and Dr. John Wayne, whom she is soon to marry, plan a happy day of freedom in the country, Nico Benelli, a charming young Italian boy, a friend of Ned Evans, collapses on the sidewalk while talking to them. They carry the boy to the shop of his grandfather, a lovable old goldsmith. Riccardo Benelli is frantic at Nico's illness, but Ruth soothes him. And then he shows her his choicest treasure, a locket shaped like a prayer book in Florentine design. Benelli had made it as a wedding present for Nico's mother, now dead. And to the boy, it is a holy symbol of the lovely mother he has lost. Suddenly, an abrupt and rather eccentric woman enters. Seeing Ruth and John helping the Benelli, she says brusquely that she sees the Benellis no longer need her. To Ruth's astonishment, the strange woman stalks out. Now, a moment later, Ruth and Riccardo Benelli are talking.
Mr. Benelli, why was Miss Pike so upset about my being here?
I don't know. I'm afraid she must be, what do you call it, jealous.
But why?
Miss Pike, she's been a very good friend to me and little Nico. We pool. She lives just upstairs, and sometimes we... When we not have so much to eat, Miss Pike, she feed Nicolino.
Oh.
I'm very full of thanks to her.
Yes, of course. But I can't understand why she should resent me.
She's strange. You see how she fly out so quick. Maybe it's because she wants a helper, me and Nico, and she thinks maybe we belong to her.
And not to me, John. I think I understand.
Once she gave me money when things was very, very bad. We owe her for many things now.
She must be very kind.
Yeah, but it's not so nice of her to speak so to you. No, I don't like her that. I must tell her so.
Oh, no, no, please don't. I don't want you to offend a good friend of Nico's.
Nico. Poverino. Miss Brewster, you sure that Dr. Wayne will cure the little boy?
He'll certainly do his best.
Huh? And the doctor, he's a good, how do you say, he's experienced?
Yes, very experienced, Mr. Minelli. John will find some way to clear up the condition which causes Nico's headaches.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Well, I won't, I promise.
You see Miss Pike lives upstairs?
Si, senora. Her door is by my shop door.
I'm going up and speak to her. Do you think she's home?
Si. Sure. You know, hear the foot on the stairs a moment ago, a clomp, a clomp. Oh, Madonna, she's angry.
Well, we can't let her stay that way. I'm going up and talk to her.
Excuse you, let me open the door, please, for you, huh?
Thank you. Is it right up these stairs?
Yes.
Tell Dr. Wayne where I am. He can call me when he's ready to leave.
Of course, Mr. Brewster. You take care on the steps, huh? They're very old and bad, very bad.
All right, I will. Thank you. May I speak to you, please? It's Ruth Brewster.
What do you want?
To tell you about Nico.
Nico? What is the matter with Nico? Is he calling for me?
I really don't know what's the matter yet, but I thought you could help us with his case history.
Well, I'll help all I can. Come in, Mrs. Brewster.
Thank you. Miss Pike, you mustn't feel that the Benellis have turned away from you.
Oh, I didn't say that.
You see, Mr. Benelli told me how kind you've been, how you've even helped them out with money. They need you desperately.
Oh, seems to me they've got more useful friends now. A fashionable doctor with a big car and lots of money.
Oh, well, I'm afraid that big car is rather deceptive, Miss Pike. See, I'm taking nurse's training so that I can help Dr. Wayne when we get married. And John isn't a fashionable doctor now. He turned down a good staff position at Raventon Hospital to work among the poor. So we may find ourselves in none too robust health, financially speaking.
Mm, that's a pretty kettle of fish, but I'm in it with you. Sit down, Mrs. Brewster.
Oh, thanks.
Here, I'll clear this stuff out of the way. We might have a cup of tea.
Oh, thank you. I'd love to. Oh, what a beautiful dress.
Like it?
Oh, it's lovely.
Well, that's why I'm broke. Put all my spare cash into materials for that dress. That lace is old.
Yes, I can see that. The gown fits that model marvelously.
If it does, it's going to fit the owner. The model is just her size.
That dress is wonderfully smart. It looks Parisian.
Well, that's made for a woman who lives in New York. One of the Van Tynes, if you please.
Really?
Now, you're wondering how I come to be making clothes for people like that.
Well,
here, I'll put the kettle on while I tell you.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
She, the Van Tyne who's going to wear that, was taken ill here in Raventon. She was traveling through when it hit her.
Oh, I see.
She wanted a new negligee run up, and someone sent her to me. I made it. And I've been making clothes for her ever since. Not all of her clothes, to be sure, but some. A while back, she wrote me and said I was a genius.
From the sample of your work, you really must be.
Well, it was known I could make women look better than most of those Frenchmen can, even if they call themselves couturiers. When I was young, I had my heart set on going to Paris, France. I saved up enough money to make the trip once, but before I could leave, Mother took ill. And she never did pick up again. And that ended my dream.
Some mute and glorious Milton.
What's that?
Oh, nothing. Just a verse about people who might have been great but stayed in a small place.
I know that poem. Learned it in school. Something about mad in the crowd, wasn't it?
Yes. Far from the madding crowd's ignoble strife, their sober wishes never learned to stray. Along the cool, sequestered veil of life, they kept the noiseless tenor of their way.
Noiseless tenor is a pretty good description of my life in this one-room tenement flat. Oh, well. You're getting married soon, aren't you?
Yes, next month. But I thought you'd never heard of me.
Rubbish. Say, who's making your wedding dress?
No one. I told you I haven't any money. And John, Dr. Wayne says he doesn't care what I wear.
Oh, and no cream or sugar in the tea,
please. It's an outrage. With your blonde coloring and figure, I could make you look like a queen.
Oh, don't tempt me.
I could find some material to set off your blue eyes. What size do you wear, 34?
Yes. So, you see, I can slip into a ready-made dress if I can find a few dollars to spend.
A ready-made wedding dress? That's a terrible idea.
Oh, I won't mind. Of course, I'd love to have a beautiful dress to go to John. But it's out of the question.
Sure.
But what are we going to do about the Vanellis? If we haven't any money and they haven't any food, that's more important.
Don't worry. They won't starve tonight. I've got a stew that ought to be good for Nico. Nice and nourishing. Easily digested.
Oh, that's good. Oh, there's John. I must go.
Will you be back?
Of course. And you'll keep an eye on Nico and his grandfather, won't you?
Yes. Of course I will.
And there won't be any more hard feelings.
No. Why should there?
That's good. Goodbye, Miss Pike.
Goodbye.
Ruth.
I'm coming, dear.
Climb in, darling.
Move your knee just a bit, will you, dear?
Sorry.
What's the matter, John? John.
I beg your pardon. I was thinking.
About what's wrong with Nico Vanelli?
Yes.
What is it, dear?
I don't know.
But you must have some idea.
I can't be sure, Ruth.
Is it very serious?
I hope not. There may be some trivial cause for his trouble. A source of infection we can easily get at and remove.
Oh, with you in charge, darling, he's going to be all right. I know he is.
Hope you're right.
Of course I am. Oh, look, John, there's Ned. Across the street.
I'll stop. What's he up to, anyway?
Heaven only knows.
Hi, Neddy.
Hi, John.
Ah, with a greeting like that, do you still think he's jealous of you, darling?
I guess not.
Hello, Neddy.
Oh, boy. Hello, Ruth. Hello, John.
Hello, Neddy.
They're shorthanded at the office, and I'm delivering the mail to the subscribers out this way.
I didn't know there were that many.
Oh, gosh, you'd be surprised. Plenty of people phoned in to say they wanted to change from the Chronicle to the Mail.
Oh, that's swell.
And don't think these papers aren't heavy. Look.
But that paper's thick. It must be 12 pages.
Wrong, Ruth. 14.
And crammed full of ads.
You bet. Jerry's taking all the business away from the Chronicle since McGregor ran away.
But then this means... It really means that Jerry's paper's going to be all right, doesn't it?
You bet your life. Well, I'll be seeing you. I've got to pen on my papers.
You're being very quiet, Ruth.
If I start talking, darling, I'll either laugh or cry. Just think, John. Jerry and Sue and the baby. They're safe from want.
Yes. And you and I, we're free. Free to marry, to live side by side and be happy. Forever and ever.
Darling.
Ruth, we will be, I promise you.
So at last the Meadows can see hope ahead. And John and Ruth face life together with promises of happiness for Ruth on her devoted lover's lips. But Nico Benelli, what is this illness which John Wayne hesitates to name? Ruth is confident John can save the boy. Is that confidence well-founded? Be sure to listen to Big Sister again tomorrow. Miss Pike?
Yes, what is it?
Well, I wouldn't like to make the same mistakes I made yesterday, so I thought maybe you'd like to help me out.
Well, all right. Good gravy, whatever would you do without me?
Gosh, I don't know, Miss Pike. Really, I don't. Now, I'd like your honest opinion of women who slave over their kitchen sinks, making real drudgery out of dishwashing.
Young man, I have no patience with women like that. There they are, with every grain of common sense telling them that if millions of women say rinso makes dishwashing real easy, there must be something in it. Maybe they just like to make work for themselves.
Well, maybe it's not exactly
good
that.
Good land of Goshen, stands to reason that when a soap has something special like that suds booster to make it give extra rich suds, it ought to be good, doesn't it? And most everybody knows rinso has a suds booster.
Well, now, maybe they don't.
Then it's high time to find out. And goodness knows, it certainly is economical enough. And
now, wait a minute, my turn now. In fact, it costs less than a cent a day to wash dishes with rinso. And you can make an extra saving now by getting it during the White Awash special sale, which your grocer is featuring.
Then what's the argument? You just stand there and tell every woman listening to get over to her grocer right now and get a big, giant-sized package.
All right, Miss Pike. And maybe they will now. Won't you, ladies? Join us tomorrow, friends, for another chapter of Rinso's Big Sister. This is Fred Utell saying, don't forget Big Sister and Rinso. R-I-N-S-O. Stay tuned in for another of Aunt Jenny's real-life stories, which follows in just a moment.
Bob's a smooth talker, but that's not enough. Somebody should tip him off that no one can get by with B.O. Why not play safe this easy, pleasant way? Take a Lifebuoy bath every day. It's so refreshing. And remember, your daily Lifebuoy bath stops B.O.
It's story time, ladies, and here's Aunt Jenny to tell you another of her real-life stories brought to you by Spry. As I said, brought to you by Spry, the purer, creamier, all-vegetable shortening. Oh, all right, I'll answer it. I just made that last sentence in time. Why, it's Fred Cooper.
Well, hello, Fred. Why didn't you walk right in?
I'm carrying such a load that I couldn't manage the door.
Oh, well, land's sakes, Fred. Sit down a spell and rest yourself.
That's just what I'm aiming to do. Thanks, Jenny.
Well, I'll give you a piece of this apple crumb pie that I baked this morning.
Well, I won't refuse because I figure you owe it to me.
What? What's the matter, Fred?
Well, just look at this mail sack. Here, heft it, will you? I guess most every woman in these United States must be writing to let you know how much she likes your cookbook, Jenny, and those frosting tits.
Oh, cheer up, Fred. There's only one more day for the offer.
Now, that's right, ladies. Tomorrow is the last day that we're making this big double-barreled offer. A copy of Aunt Jenny's own 52-page cookbook, cram-jammed with the most tempting, easy-to-make recipes you ever tasted in your life. For all occasions. Everyday economy dishes, company dishes, why, everything you want.
Mm-hmm, and that's only half the offer, ladies. There's a set of 6 different colored frosting tints comes with it.
Rose, blue, green, yellow, red, and orange.
Say, you know, my wife and I made a birthday cake yesterday for the little fellow that lives next door to us.
Mm-hmm.
And she put white frosting on it. And then wrote, happy birthday in pink on the top.
Oh, fine. And you know, folks, you can use these tints for candies, too, and jellied salads.
So hurry, ladies, and send for those 2 gift offers today. Now, just send in 1 Spry disc from the top of any can of Spry, plus 10 cents in coin, to Aunt Jenny, Box 19, New York City. And did you get that? It's 1 Spry disc and 10 cents to Aunt Jenny, Box 19, New York City. But do it today, ladies, or you may forget, and then it'll be too late. And now, Aunt Jenny, how about that story?
Ready right away, Danny. Now, you remember, folks, how I told you about Molly Allen, who loved Bill Crawford, and how Bill went on an experimental flight to South America and never returned? Parts of his plane were picked up at sea, but he wasn't ever found. Now, during the course of a whole year, there was no news. And meantime, Chris Johnson, who'd always loved Molly, finally persuaded her to accept him. He knew she didn't love him, but he hoped that she would sometime. Well, about 3 months after they'd been married, Dr. Tim rang the doorbell and...
Dr. Tim, glad you dropped in to see us.
Well, I had to see how the bride and groom were getting along.
Here, Tim, this chair's more comfortable.
Thanks, Molly. You know, I thought I might be able to scare up a game of chess with you people if you're not doing anything.
Oh, gosh, dear, that'd be fine, but... Well, as a matter of fact, I've been trying to get Molly to go out tonight. It's been weeks since she's been anywhere, and tonight we thought of...
Oh, well, in that case, I bite my lip, I bow gracefully, and make my exit. Some other night.
Oh, no, why don't you come along with us?
Dr. Tim, don't give up. You and Chris will be able to play chess. Here, I'll set the chessmen out for you.
But, Molly,
Chris, I don't feel at all like going out.
Oh, but Molly, I don't want to spoil Chris's party.
I wouldn't have gone even if you hadn't come.
Don't you feel well, Molly?
As well as I ever do.
Molly, what you need is a change.
No, don't try to be a doctor, Tim. You and Chris just play chess, and if you don't mind, I'll go upstairs. They're all set out for you now.
But look, Molly, if you feel tired, why don't you lie down here on the davenport, and then later Tim and I'll make some coffee.
No, Chris, I'd rather go upstairs. You'll excuse me, won't you, Tim?
Well, of course, Molly.
And I'm sorry that I don't feel like going out.
Oh, that's all right, Molly. We'll run up and see you later. Well, Tim, that's the way it's been for months.
Not much fun for either of you, is it?
Oh, I don't mind about myself.
But you're worried about Molly.
Mm-hmm. Tim, the marriage just hasn't worked out. We've both tried, but now it's no dice. Upstairs now, she'll take out Bill Crawford's picture and those crazy postcards he used to send her, and she'll just lie there staring at them. It's over a year since Bill Crawford was lost, but for Molly, he's as much alive as he was the day his plane took off for South America.
You married Molly, taking a chance that she'd learn to love you.
Yeah, I went into it with my eyes open, Tim, but I guess I slipped up on one thing. I underestimated a ghost.
A ghost?
Mm-hmm. The ghost of Bill Crawford. He's been with us right along. It was there the day we married, there on the honeymoon, there when we came back here and took this house. We've never really been married, not from the start. A little while ago, you said a woman could be a bride for 50 years if she wanted to be. Molly's never been a real bride.
Well, sometimes ghosts fade away.
Oh, not this one, Tim. He's getting stronger all the time. For Molly, he's more real now than I am. She's trying to hide it because she doesn't want to hurt me. But she's slipping back, Tim, back to the way she was just after the crash, and I can't do anything but watch and pray for a miracle.
Chris, the other day you said you had an offer from a bank in South America to go into their legal department. Was it a good offer?
The kind of a break that comes once in a lifetime.
Have you done anything about it yet?
Well, I didn't want to tell Molly till I was sure the offer was definite.
Well, I'm not sure my advice has worked out so far, but do you want another piece of it?
What, Tim?
If they do offer you this job and it's as good as you say, take it and clear out of here as fast as you can.
Well, I mean to, but, well, I'm not sure how Molly will take it.
Well, that's just why you have to take this South American offer, to get Molly out of here. A new country, a new start. Ghosts can travel, but they're like ball clubs. Not so good away from their home parks. I'd say take this job, Chris, and maybe you'll have a child later on.
You know, it's a little thing, Tim. But Molly has never even called me darling.
That's not a little thing, Chris.
Let's get the chess game started, huh, then?
Okay. I'll take the black.
It's my move, then, huh?
Yes, Chris, it's your move. And for your sake and Molly's, make it a big one.
Molly?
Yes, Chris.
Last week, I think it was the day before Dr. Tim was over here playing chess. I had a job offered to me in the legal department of a bank. More money and a wide-open future.
Oh, I'm glad for you. You've worked so hard, you deserve something like this. When does the job start?
Well, as soon as we get there.
Get there? It's not here in town?
No, it's in South America, Molly.
South America?
It's the branch of a New York banking house. You see, this country's doing more trading with South America all the time.
South America? Well, that would mean leaving everything. The clients you've built with Dr. Tim, all your friends.
Well, Dr. Tim said I'd be crazy if I didn't take it, Molly. It means the difference between just getting along all my life and really being a success.
Chris, if it's as good a chance as that, you ought to go. But I can't go with you.
Molly, I couldn't go without you. You know that.
Chris, I don't want to leave this town. Ever.
But why not? You haven't been happy here.
There's a part of me here. And I'd feel as if I were deserting if I went away from it. I wish I could go with you, Chris. You deserve this chance. I want you so much to be happy.
You're the one I want to see happy, Molly. That's why I want you to come. I wish you could leave this haunted town tomorrow, but if you can't...
Why did you say that, Chris? This haunted town.
Well, let's not fool ourselves, Molly.
This time...
from the bottom of my heart. For your sake. Because you've been so kind and been so decent. I wish it weren't haunted for me. But it is. And I guess that's all there is to it. I'm your wife, and I'll always be as long as you want me. But I can't help how I feel.
Molly, let's forget about this now. I'll turn the job down.
No, don't do
that. Well, I'll just put it on the shelf and forget about it. If they want to get someone else, they can. Other chances come along, and meanwhile, you and I can try to do better right where we are.
Chris, you've tried for months to get me to take a weekend up in the mountains. I'll go this week if you'd like.
Will you, Molly?
We'll start Friday. You can take your fishing tackle.
Oh, that's...
And I promise I'll try to cook anything you can.
The doorbell is pretty late for anybody to be calling.
I'll answer.
No, I'll go. Oh, Dr. Timms.
Chris, is Molly here?
Well, sure. Come on in.
Dr. Tim, what is it? You're as pale as a ghost.
A ghost? You're nearer right than you think, Molly.
Tim, what is it?
I just had a cable from South America.
South America?
They found Bill Crawford. He's alive.
Oh.
Tim, she's fainted.
She'll be all right. Get me some water.
Water. All right.
Hurry up. Molly, it's Dr. Tim. Molly.
Dr. Tim. Oh, Tim, I thought you came in here and said...
I did say it, Molly, and it's true.
Bill Crawford's alive?
From what I can make out, he's still in pretty bad shape, but he's alive, Molly. And they've started him on the ship back for New York.
Tim, this is what I've always believed.
Tim, here's the water.
She'll be all right now. It was a shock of the news.
Tim, it's wonderful if it's true. Bill's really alive?
He's alive, Chris, and coming back. The fisherman who picked him up didn't have a radio or any contact with Will outside, and Bill's skull must have been fractured when the plane hit. That's why we didn't hear.
Oh, Tim.
They took him back to their village, probably thinking he was a sailor. And with the injury, Bill was half out of his head for nearly a year, not able to tell them anything.
But he is alive, Tim.
Yes. Alive. Molly, what's the matter?
Molly, what is it?
I just remembered. Bill and I were to have been married when he came back. But now...
But now, you're married to Chris.
Well, now, Jenny, you know, it was hard to see how they'd get out of that mess.
It was terrible. Poor Molly didn't know what to do. She didn't want to hurt Chris, but she still loved Bill devotedly.
Yeah, I guess she did. Plumb crazy about him. I felt sorry for all three of them.
I guess we all did, Fred. And my, oh, me, the amount of talk that went flying around Littleton. Molly should do this. Molly should do that. Molly always loved Bill. And Molly should remember she married Chris for better or worse. And I guess poor Molly was thinking all those thoughts, too, because of what she decided.
Never mind what she decided, Aunt Jenny. That's the climax, the point of the whole story, and that's got to be saved for tomorrow.
This apple crumb pie can't be saved for tomorrow, and after the dent I made in it, Danny here was only a split second behind me when it come to taking another piece.
Well, it's a grand pie, Aunt Jenny. I don't believe I ever tasted one just like it before.
No, me either. You know, I thought I knowed most every kind of apple pie there is, but this one's new to me. It's a humdinger. Say... What's that good taste and stuff on top of it, Jenny?
Oh, listen, Fred. It's a one-crust pie, ladies, with a brown sugar and nut topping. And a lot of you will find the receipt in a new Spry ad that's going to be in your papers either tomorrow night or tonight.
Well, I'm going to tell my wife to be looking for that. You know, I'm mighty fond of things made with apples, and the new crop's coming in right now.
Yes, it sure is. And I guess your folks are real fond of apples, too, ladies. So I just want to tell you that in this cookbook of mine that we're suggesting you send for, you'll find all kinds of good apple receipts.
Yes, there are two-crust pies and one-crust pies and deep-dish pies and apple fritters and baked apple dumpling and Dutch apple cake, just to mention a few. Mm-hmm. And ladies, when you serve a tender, flaky apple pie, you want to get the full, fine flavor of your apple filling, don't you? You don't want to be conscious with every bite you take that your crust's a little off flavor. Then make purer crust with Spry. No all flavors in tender, flaky Spry crust.
And the reason for that, folks, is because Spry stays fresh longer. That's one of the three extra advantages it brings you.
Spry creams so easily, too. And that makes quick, easy work of cake mixing. And Spry is purer. And that means no unpleasant, acrid odor when you fry. Now, remember, Spry is the only shortening that brings you all three of these advantages. So, isn't it very much to your advantage to get Spry?
There's only one answer they can make to that, Dan.
Yes, and they're making that answer, Fred. Millions of women have changed to Spry, and thousands more are doing so every day. So join the parade. Get Spry from your grocer this afternoon and send it once for the cookbook and frosting tins. Because remember, tomorrow is the very last time this offer will be made. So, better sit down and send for yours right now. You know, for your convenience, your grocer has a special order blank. Ask him for it. But most important of all, remember it takes just one Spry disc and 10 cents in coin to get a big 52-page cookbook and a set of 6 different colored frosting tins. And be sure to get the address right. It's Aunt Jenny, Box 19, New York City. And ladies, don't you forget to hear how this story of Bill and Molly and Chris turned out. It seemed like an unsolvable tangle at the time. Wouldn't you say so? Molly kept saying over and over and over,
"How can I hurt Chris after he's been so good, so understanding? And yet I love Bill more than life itself."
You see, no matter what happened, someone was bound to be hurt. What did they finally do? You'll find out tomorrow. True names are never used in Spry's real-life stories. Dan Seymour speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Here is the district weather forecast. Fair tonight and Friday, cooler with lowest temperature about 54 degrees tonight. Slowly rising temperature Friday, gentle north backing to west winds. 11 o'clock, the correct time, WJSD, Washington.